Chapter 23. The din around me was terrible. Wheeled down a ramp, strapped flat, I tried to turn my head but could not. Voices, movement, a face peered down at me, a woman's face, and I heard a woman's voice. She was flashing a light in my eyes and telling me to do something. I could not do it. Sorry, I thought.
Are you in a health plan?
Another voice asked insistently.
You have Blue Cross? Can you sign this form if I hold it for you? Here's a pencil. You may sign it with your left hand if you wish.
The hell with you, I thought. I could see two California Highway Patrolmen in their brown uniforms, standing off to one side with a clipboard, looking bored. Wheelchairs, gurneys, little young nurses in short skirts, and a crucifix on the wall. Beside me, a Highway Patrol officer bent down and said,
"Don't let your insurance company fix up your car. It's leaking oil from the motor. The block is cracked."
"Okay," I managed to whisper. I felt nothing, thought nothing.
"I'm going to have to cite you, Mr. Brady,"
the Highway Patrol officer said.
"We're following too close and driving at an unsafe speed. I have your license. We're checking for warrants. You're going right into surgery, so I'll return your license to the personal property office of the hospital. It'll be with your other things, your wallet and keys and money."
"Thank you," I said. The officer departed. I lay there alone, thinking to myself, what the hell? What the hell? They should call somebody, I thought. Rachel. They ought to notify her. I should tell them. Remind them. What do they care? I thought. I wonder what hospital this is. I was driving where? Just into Orange County. I never made it back to Placentia, back home. Well, so much for that. I'll take his advice, I decided. Not let them fix the car. They can total it and auction it. What do I care what I get for it? What do I care about anything? Two nurses took hold of my gurney and began to wheel it cheerfully. Bump, bump, roll. Stop for the elevator. They stood together with smiles. I stared fixedly, straight up. There was an IV bottle mounted above me. 5% glucose, I read from the label. To keep a vein open, I decided. Incredibly bright white lights beamed down on me. This was the operating room. They put a mask over the lower part of my face. I heard male voices, conferring. A needle stuck into my arm. It hurt. It was the first thing I had felt. The bright white lights suddenly turned black, like dead coals. I floated across a desert landscape which showed red and brown far below me. Far off, the outline of mesas. A great void in which I moved, suspended and effortless. Someone approached me, far off, beyond the dry mesas, invisible presence, shining with love. It was Vallis. I recognized his being. He was familiar, the concern, the understanding, the desire to help. We exchanged no words. I heard no voice, no sound at all except a continual gentle roaring like wind. The sounds of the wasteland, the desert, the great open places of the world. Wind and water rushing. But they did not seem impersonal. They seemed alive, as if part of Vallis. Expressions of him, as kind and warm and loving as he was. He animated the mesas. Vallis asked me, silently, if I thought he had forgotten me. I said, what if they shoot down the satellite? No matter. It is a pinpoint in the sky. Behind it lies only light. A sheet of light, not sky. Did I cash in? I asked. No response. I'm coming here eventually, I said. I know that. I recognize this place. I have been here before. You were born here. You have come back. This is my homeland, I said. I am your father, Vallis said. Where are you? Above the stars, Vallis said. I came from above the stars? Yes, many times. Then I said, that was me, who took over when the ad came in the mail? That was yourself, remembering who you are. Who am I? I said. Everyone. Amazed, I said, everyone. No response. Only the pulsations of love. What am I going to do? I asked. You asked to be broken down, Vallis answered, and healed. This is that breaking down and healing. You will be changed. And go on? I asked. The warmth of his love consumed me like an invisible cloud of light. He responded, "And go on. Nothing is ever lost." "I can't be lost?" I asked. "There is nowhere for anything to go. There is only here and us, for all time." I realized then that Vallis and I had never been separated, that he had only fallen silent from time to time. I felt tired now. I had drifted low over the mesas, and I wanted to rest. There was a lessening sense of Vallis's presence, as if he were withdrawing. Yet he still remained, like a lamp turned down, down but not off. Like a child, I had assumed that something no longer seen no longer existed. To an infant, when its parents leave the room, they cease to be. But as he grows older, he understands differently. They are there, whether or not he can see them, or touch them, or hear their voices. It is an early lesson, but sometimes, perhaps, not completely learned. So now I knew who Vallis was. He was my father, my real father, from whose race I came repeatedly into this world, to leave again, to return again, to work toward some distant goal unseen, not as yet comprehended. The search, perhaps, was the goal. As I achieved a little motion toward it, I understood it. Overthrowing the tyranny of Ferris Fremont was a stop along the way, not a goal, but a moment of decision, from which I then continued as before, changed to some extent, but changed by my father, not by what I had done. For I understood, Vallis himself did it through me. The virtue lay with him. "We are gloves," I realized, "which our father puts on in order to achieve his objectives. What a pleasure to be that, to be of use. Part of a greater organism, its extensions into space and time, into the world of change, to influence that change, the greatest joy of all." "I can instruct you," Vallis's thoughts came, without the satellite. "It is a thing to show them, a shiny toy, to make them understand. When it fired, it did its task. It served to open your mind and other minds. Those minds, opened once, will never close. The contact is established and the circuit is in place. It will remain that way." "I am linked up then," I realized, "for all time." "You have remembered. You know. There is now no forgetting. Be of good cheer." "Thank you," I said. The reddish mesas, the level plain below me, faded. The sky closed and the sound of rushing wind slowly diminished. Vallis was out of my sight now, his face turned away from me, retractile in his cycle. I experienced this time no loss as I always had before. Son of Earth and starry heaven. The old rite, the disclosure to the ancient initiate. I had undergone the Orphic ceremonies, down in the dark caves, to emerge suddenly into the chamber of light, to see the gold tablet that reminded me of my own nature and my past. Trip across space from Albemuth, the far star, migration to this world, to blend here and escape from our mole-like enemy. That enemy had soon followed, and the garden we built had been polluted and made toxic with his presence, with his wastes. We sank into the silt, we became half-blind, we forgot, until reminded. Reminded by the rotating voice from the nearby sky, placed there long ago, in case a calamity occurred, a break in the chain of continuity. Such a break did come, and presently the voice automatically fired, and informed us, as best it could, of what we no longer knew. If the Russians did photograph the ETI satellite, the invader, they would find it old and pitted.
It had been there thousands of years.
What a surprise that would be. They too might remember, until the mole-like adversary closed up their minds and they forgot again, were made to forget again, as the deformed landscape, clouded over by the poisoned atmosphere, occluded their senses and thoughts, and they fell again as before. Recurrent cycles, I realized, of coming awake for a time, then falling back into sleep. I had, like the others, been asleep, but then I had woken up, or rather I had been awakened out of my sleep deliberately. The voice of a friend had called to me, as it moved among the rows of new corn, new life, and I had heard and recognized it. That voice was always calling, always attempting to wake us up, we who slept. Perhaps, eventually, we all would awaken, to communicate once again with our parent race beyond the stars, as if we had never left. Albemuth, our first home. We were wanderers, exiles, all of us, whether we knew it or not. Perhaps most of us wanted to forget. Memory, to be aware of our true condition, our identity, was too painful. We would make this place our home, and we would recall nothing else. It was easier that way. The simplicity of unawareness, the easier way, deadly in its outcome. Without memory, we had fallen victim to our adversary. We had forgotten him, too, and been overtaken and surprised. That was the price we paid. We paid it now.